Okay, you might want to get close to your radio.
My deal is we can have an honest conversation where both sides have some issues.
I love it.
I want to officially welcome you to News One Now with Roland Martin.
I'm Roland Martin. Today on News One Now, protests in Baltimore over the death of Freddie Gray. His funeral will be held this morning. Loretta Lynch is going to be sworn in today as the new Attorney General of the United States. And, of course, outgoing AG Eric Holder had some final words about criminal justice reform on Friday. The Progressive National Baptist Convention USA, they are pushing the black churches to come out strong in support of Black Lives Matter. We'll talk with their national president. Plus, kettlebells are a simple way to get fit and tone up. Today on Fit, Live, Win Monday. Also, if you're looking to start your own business, there's some legal issues you must focus on. All that more coming up right now on News One Now on TV One. Folks were arrested in Baltimore over the weekend as protests over the death of Freddie Gray continue. More than 3,000 people have been organized and mobilized to protest the death of Gray, who died after his spine was severed while being transported in the back of a police van to the police station. Gray's wake took place on yesterday. His funeral will take place this morning in a couple of hours. The public viewing will take place at 10 a.m. The funeral will be at 11 a.m. at New Shiloh Baptist Church. His family says his vocal box was smashed and his neck snapped during his fatal encounter with police. Anthony Batts, the Baltimore Police Commissioner, spoke this weekend.
The timeline will continue to change. We found new information, and we will continue to find more information as we go. We know he was not buckled in the transportation wagon, as he should have been. No excuses for that, period. We know our police employees failed to get him medical attention in a timely manner multiple times. There are still many questions that we don't have the answers to, and some open-ended areas that we need to focus heavily on.
Over the weekend, there were protests on Saturday that within a band of folks all of a sudden decided to get violent, smashing some windows, also focusing on some police cars as well. And so police were out in full force. At one point during Saturday's unrest, the city told folks, 40,000 folks who were at Camden Yards at the baseball game, to remain in the stadium and not to leave until police could get control of the situation. And this, of course, this was protests outside of Camden Yards. Right now on the panel, we have attorney Malik Drake, managing editor of Politic365.com, Lauren Victoria Burke, also director of the NAACP's Washington Bureau, Hillary Shelton. Please play the video again. I want to go to our panel. So this weekend, so you saw this video here, it took place over the weekend, and it was quite interesting because you had all of these media folks, all of these decision makers who were at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and they all ignored what was taking place in Baltimore as the dinner was going on, as if that was more important news than what was taking place there. And one of the issues that I talked to a pastor this morning that he had to say, he said that, look, they had more than 3,000 folks mobilized over the weekend. A handful of folks chose to do this action. But this is part of the issue also when you talk about protests, because if a handful of folk act a fool, then all of a sudden that becomes the dominant story. With protests moving forward, how does one get control and maintain control of a situation that's frankly rather fluid?
Well, first of all, I like to say that just because a few people acted a fool, as you said, it should not take away from the cause. I mean, if we remember just a few weeks ago with the NCAA tournament and those kids rioting when Kentucky lost. Okay, I mean, this is an actual issue right here.
That was the media called that kids blowing off steam.
Absolutely. And so why is that kids blowing off steam? And then we have someone who died in police custody, and you have thousands of protesters and just a few people that, as you say, acted a fool. Why should that take away from the cause?
Well, how you get control is you give the community answers. And unfortunately,
unfortunately, the police chief and the mayor are kind of slow in doing that. The mayor's taking this posture of, you know, well, I'm waiting for answers just like everybody else, but she should be taking the posture of demanding answers, and the police chief doesn't have any answers, and somebody's dead. So that's why you're not getting control of the situation. Whether it was a smaller group or not, I don't think that really actually makes any difference. The mayor's pretty quick in getting out and saying that violence is unacceptable. She should be saying that what the cops did was unacceptable.
It does make
there's
a
no
difference.
Way, there's no reason not to say that.
It does make a difference, and here's why. Because at the end of the day, we could sit here on this network and we can say, well, this is where the focus should be. But the reality is, when those images are shown on other networks, when they are discussed through that particular prism, it causes folks to say, oh, this now negates from the very
they
issue.
They say that anyway. Well,
yes, no, no, no.
They
I understand they said it anyway, but the reality is when that becomes the dominant narrative, it gets away from what the real issue, and we've seen it time and time
they
again,
will
Hillary.
They never focus on police brutality.
But the point is, it still is a matter of when you're talking about protesting and you're talking about mobilizing and organizing, it is still a matter of having a controlled environment, you have to deal with
and
that.
If it was controlled, Bill O'Reilly would still change the topic.
I don't care what Bill O'Reilly thinks. I'm saying,
though, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but
they
we also have,
talk about
Lauren,
black
we also have black folks who are also there as well. You have to deal with that. Narrative is also part of the conversation.
And that's the point. That's the point. What happens is the distractions that are created by the few that aren't really focusing on really the role of a demonstration in the first place. A demonstration is just that. It's something to help point the attention on where the problem is. But when you have people that begin to involve themselves in violence, to protest a violent situation, it is a distraction. The focus has to be on what happened with these police officers. And quite frankly, I'm a little concerned about the narrative that's still shifting everything away from the damages done to Freddie Gray before he got into that paddy wagon at all.
And
that should not be taken off the list.
I saw a tweet. Hold on one second. Hold on. Uh-huh. I saw a tweet this weekend where the NAACP is opening an office in the community where Freddie Gray was from. Talk about that.
Absolutely. Listen, we're very convinced that that's a community. The entire community there is one that's very similar in a lot of ways. It's very poor. There's been a lot of violence in those communities. We want to find ways to solve those problems. The best way to solve any problem in any community is to move in there and stay there and work the
So first of all, the national headquarters of the NAACP are in Baltimore.
That's right.
But you also have a Baltimore chapter of the NAACP.
Exactly.
And so this is opening an office of the chapter or the national
or the
organization
branch.
In
well,
the community.
It'll be a vehicle of the branch, but it'll be a direct communicate with the national organization that is in Baltimore as well. So the idea is to make sure we can bring strategies and approaches to addressing these problems, but also help organize the collection of information to prevent this from happening again.
Okay.
We already know that the legislative strategy, I mean, we know what the legislative strategy is. We just saw the president do a whole commission on 21st century policing.
No,
had a bunch of recommendations.
That's part of
we
the strategy.
We know what the strategy is to sort of prevent this from happening again. The question is, are we going to put enough pressure on power to get to that point where we change the law?
But that was the presidential one. And this is what I go back to. I go back to this is also a question of local. But here's
right.
what you
well,
all
it's the same,
No, no, no,
it's
no.
the same policy.
Well,
it's the same legislation. It's just a local template.
No, actually, it's not.
It is. It's not independent grand jury legislation, whether it's federal or state. And here's why, and this is what we have to deal with.
Mm-hmm. And this is what, again, looking at the issue between a Baltimore and a Ferguson.
Sure.
What you have here is, what do you have? You had a black mayor.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You have a black police commission.
Right.
You have a black DA.
Mm-hmm.
You have significant black population on the police department. And so it does change the narrative and change in terms of how we have been approaching it. What I still go back to when I talk about what is different is that the president and his commission can do one thing, but these sort of practices are extremely localized issues
Absolutely.
That require a different legislative focus that's not Washington, D.C., not even Annapolis. It's really in terms
in
of
the
within
right.
the department and the culture in terms of the people who they're also employing, who they're bringing in, and what practices they're going to change.
Well, look, Roland, first, we should commend the president for what he's doing nationally. We have to set down some national standards for how we address these issues of policing concerns and whatnot as well. But the point you're saying is absolutely right as well. Don't let the president off the hook. He's trying to do the right thing, and we need to move to make sure we implement those policies. But the fight really is at the local level, and that is we need a police accountability review boards with real power to subpoena, the power of independence and resources to be able to investigate these cases at the ground level and address these policing issues one at a time as they happen, empowering the
Malik, community. I don't believe you're going to see substantive change in the actions of police until police officers go to prison.
That's a very good point.
You can go police review board, you can go indictment, you can go all those different things.
That's the grand jury.
I just simply believe, not necessarily.
Well, that's because, what it would lead
no,
to.
No, not true, because a grand jury can simply, a grand jury can issue the indictment. If they go to trial, that's not the grand jury.
What law are we pushing for?
No.
I'm just wondering, what law are we pushing for?
First of all, you're jumping over something. My issue is this here. The grand jury is still one piece of it, okay? First of all, the DA does not always have to take a case to the grand jury. You can actually charge somebody and you can actually go to trial. The cop-out typically is a DA taking it to the grand jury. So I'm not even focused on the grand jury.
So it's an independent prosecutor.
What I'm saying is it's also jury decisions. And in terms of that is, I believe from an accountability standpoint, when cops start going to prison and when they realize that if I commit wrongdoing and I might get convicted, then all of a sudden it changes the dynamic.
So we need an independent prosecutor.
No, is that a question of independent prosecutors?
What are we pushing for?
Well, first of all, we're pushing for a multiple number of things, not just one.
What's number one? What would number one be?
Hold on one second. We'll deal with that. But again, there are multiple issues here. It's not just one. And that's one of the things that people have to understand about this whole criminal justice reform. There are multiple pieces here. And when we only think it's just one, you can't get one and say that's it. Like body cameras. Folks thought body cameras was a one. That wasn't it. We saw Eric Garner who was killed. We'll talk about that. Plus Loretta Lynch when we come back. We'll also hear from the president of the National Baptist Convention USA about what the role they're going to play in the issue of Black Lives Matter. 11 after the hour. News 1 Now, TV 1.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Welcome back, News 1 Now on TV 1. We're talking about this whole issue in terms of how do we change this system. On Friday, Attorney General Eric Holder gave his final speech as AG, where he talked about making changes to the criminal justice reform. 11 a.m. this morning, Loretta Lynch is going to be sworn in as the first African-American U.S. Attorney General. I want to go back to our panel. We're talking about this issue in terms of criminal justice reform. The point I'm making, Lauren, is there can't be one. And the reason there can't be one, because you have to attack this problem on multiple fronts. And so what I'm talking about, so you got a federal piece, as a state piece, as a local piece. Not only do we say, how do we change the law? There's still, Reverend Jackson, when he was in Ferguson, he was talking to some group of young folks, and they were saying, man, we want to see some changes. And he said, okay, so do you want to see Darren Wilson convicted? Absolutely. He says, are you registered? No. He said, well, you can never serve on the jury. So that's one piece. And so one piece, having us serve on jurors. Another piece, that is who we elect as DEA. Another piece, changing the law for independent prosecutor, civilian review boards.
Absolutely.
Also, change training. Okay. Also changing police practices, because part of the issue is literally, Malik, the leeway that we're giving police officers to do whatever they want, where they can simply claim if my life was in danger, I was justified in shooting.
Even as irrational as that might very well be. And that's important as we talk about that issue as well. At what point is it rational in these circumstances? In Michael Brown's case, it was not rational for a 6'4" tall police officer, heavily armed, to say, I felt threatened by an unarmed African-American 18-year-old that was scheduled to start college the next week. I apologize, but we have to talk about that very issue as well as judgment.
Well, one of the things that's going to be helpful, and thank God we have it, is that nowadays we have video at least. I mean, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, all you had was the officer's word. At least now we have some other version. Now, lately, nothing has happened because of that version, and hopefully as we go forward, something will happen.
I disagree. In Michigan, the police officer was fired who beat the brother. That police officer is facing charges. In North Charleston, that police officer was certainly charged. The next step is what happens now in terms of when you go to trial.
Sure.
But again, the point here is this here. When we say Well, if there's one, there are multiple things. When the folks with March to Justice were here, when they presented a packet of various reforms.
They had three pieces of legislation.
Yes.
Three pieces.
Right. So
that
right,
they will
right.
work on one at a time. My only point is
that's
we can't
pieces.
Do five things at the same time.
Yes, normally, we can.
Normally, when you have political victories, you do one thing at a time, you win, and then you go to the next thing.
But Lauren,
we don't do
but
that,
Lauren,
and
but
that's
but
why
Lauren,
we don't win.
But Lauren, that's only when you're speaking of, in terms of, let's say, federal action. So, for instance.
No, I'm talking about federal or state.
No,
you take one battle at a time.
Well, first of all.
You take one battle at a time. Generally
speaking, number
you take
of people,
one battle at
no,
a time.
No, actually, no, I disagree.
Really?
With the number of people and the number of organizations, because here's the piece. You can't have everybody saying, okay, we're going to focus on this one piece of federal legislation while city councils and states are running rampant.
Well, legacy civil rights groups can hardly come up with an agenda, general agenda, much less a specific agenda.
I'm not speaking of legacy civil rights groups.
As a legacy
can we
civil
name,
rights group,
go right ahead.
Let me humbly
just,
I can.
On police brutality?
Let me tell you exactly what it is. At the local level is very comprehensive police accountability review boards, real power, independence to be able to investigate, subpoena, and even compel charges to be brought by the prosecuting attorney in those particular cases, but also having an administrative approach. As move a step beyond that. We know that there are as many ideas about the acceptable use of force as there are police departments, and there are as many interpretations of those policies as there are police officers. What that means is when we see these cases happen, every single time the police chief comes out and says, my guy acted in accordance with the letter of the law. There's a problem with the law. We don't have a clear idea of what is the acceptable use of force. Next step up, when it goes before a judge and a jury, it has to also avoid the confusion of a grand jury system as we know it now. The way the game was played in Ferguson is the prosecuting attorney dropped so much information with so little direction on what the grand jury was supposed to do with that, they couldn't come up with any reason to indict. In essence, they overwhelmed them. The grand jury is a vehicle of the prosecuting attorney's office. It is a tool utilized by the prosecutor to determine whether charges should be brought. If they dump everything on it, they can mislead the grand jury and send them away from any kind of indictment.
Here is
that becomes part of the problem.
The mistake that we make is when we refuse to recognize our power and our infrastructure.
Absolutely.
And what I'm saying is this here. While action is happening on Capitol Hill, we cannot ignore changes that can be made local. So, for instance, when people ask me, what do? From a local level, from a city council level and commissioner's court level and a state police officer, our emphasis should be every single one of those folks should have body cameras. That's one thing. That's one thing.
Right.
Now, while you're pushing that, you also can be pushing increased police training, which is a matter of the police chief and the city council as well.
Right.
Those are two issues. Now, while Congress is doing their thing, you can be doing that thing locally as well. That's
like
operating
in Baltimore.
But that's
like in Baltimore.
No, not just in Baltimore.
Well, let's talk about Baltimore.
No, one second.
Baltimore has a history of police brutality we've known about for years.
And
right?
After Ferguson, what happened after? First of all, the reason that you have a black state's attorney now in that Baltimore area,
right,
because the previous guy didn't do it. So
right,
you know what the folks did there? They elected somebody different. And what I'm saying, after Ferguson, Los Angeles Police Department passed the body cameras. Houston did as well. What I'm saying is this here. I will not tell people we can only do one thing at one time. We cannot, and this is the mistake, think that is going to fix everything. If that fixes everything and you ignore local and you ignore state, we're going to have the same problems, because you know what? There can be no federal law that can oversee a police investigation.
Let me just
in terms of a police,
so
being convicted.
So if we talk about Baltimore, let's talk local, right?
Okay, sure.
What would fix Baltimore? We've got the black mayor. We've got the prosecutor. We've got all the pieces in place.
Well, no, we don't.
That's
part of the problem. We don't have a good, clear policy first.
Okay.
To be able to train, you have to have policy in which you're training.
Of course.
So we need policy that speaks to the use of force, what is acceptable in apprehending a suspect, and reminding these police officers these are suspects, and then the accountability measure along those lines as well.
So is that law or is that policy in terms of the mayor? Is that law?
It's all
that
the above.
Pass state
it's all
law?
The
it's
above.
All above.
Okay.
Because again,
restructuring
the,
at the local
because
level
again, thing. The city council can pass a law, but the police chief can put into place various practices that doesn't even require a law being passed by the city council.
Okay.
And that's pressure being applied there. But I'm going back to your earlier question. What's the one thing? There is no one thing.
Well, we
that's where
focus.
We lose.
We do have to focus one at a time when we try to get political victory, right?
Where
we can't
start,
focus on
start.
Five
no,
things at the same
no,
time.
No, 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 no. What you do.
I mean,
actually,
win because they focus.
No, actually,
they win because they focus.
They focus, but what they don't do is they don't say, well, the one thing is going to be focusing on D.C., but I'm ignoring local. Here's what you
I'm
do.
I'm not ignoring
here's
local.
You do.
I'm saying that let's talk about
deal.
Baltimore.
What's the
We've
one?
Been sitting here watching Baltimore for years. The Baltimore Sun did that big story on police brutality and the
okay.
pounds, and we're sitting here talking about Baltimore with a black
hell, we're talking about New York Police
chief,
Department for years.
And nothing ever changes.
And L.A. for years.
Baltimore
where
the NAACP is based.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about Baltimore for a second. Let's talk about why that city, why we keep seeing these things over and over again.
Here's the real test in Baltimore, and that is, will you see the new state's attorney,
right.
will that particular person,
right.
unlike the previous one,
right.
prosecute a cop?
Exactly.
That's what it's going to come down to.
Right.
You're saying,
right.
when you see it,
right.
you
well,
have to
see
actually
it.
See that.
Let's see it. Let's
well,
see
good.
Because we've
well, we
been
have
doing
to see
this
it.
Now for years with this police brutality thing, where we just sort
well,
of
hell, we've been
and it keeps going
black
on and on.
Police brutality
and we never
walked on this lane.
We never seem to get to the point where
that ain't new.
At some point, we got to solve this stuff. We got to have a political strategy that's focused to solve this stuff. Baltimore's a good test case.
First of all, Baltimore's not going to be the test case.
It should be a test case.
Baltimore can be the test case.
It should be a test case.
New York can be the test case.
I think Baltimore's a good test case.
North Charleston, I can go down the whole line with
the test case. I think we have a black mayor and
black
police chief.
Here's the piece.
It's a good test case.
The fundamental issue you're going to have, it's not just been a question of policy, it's also culture, Malik. Because here's the deal. You can pass every law, but unless you change police culture, which also means that citizens have to stop allowing police to do it, give them so much leeway. If you give them leeway, they're going to go as far as they can. Malik, go ahead.
The other thing about that is, you talk about culture, and you're talking about Baltimore. We don't know what happened, right? We don't know. There is no video in this case. And so when you talk about what's going to be the outcome, well, maybe nothing happens because there's no evidence. You know, they're going to do their investigation, which is run by the police,
right.
essentially. And so I would not be surprised if nothing comes out of it because there really is no evidence.
The person sitting, Hillary, 30 seconds, I got to go.
Look, there is evidence. The evidence is you have a young man whose spine was severed. That's Exhibit A.
I agree with that.
Here's
but that's a result. We don't know why it happened.
Coming up, newly elected president of the Progressive National Baptist Convention USA, Reverend Dr. James Perkins, is going to be here talking about voting rights, but also social justice reform. We'll talk to him about Black Lives Matter, plus his Fit Live Win Monday. All that next on News One Now on TV One.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is, when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
We talk about the issue of Black Lives Matter, social justice reform, criminal justice reform. Everybody has a role to play, including the Black church. Joining us right now, the new president of the National Baptist Convention USA, the Reverend Dr. James Perkins. Doc, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I need to say that I am the president of the Progressive.
I'm sorry,
my bad.
Yes, president of Progressive National Baptist. My apologies. I'm sorry about
no
that.
No problem.
For folks out there who don't know about the Progressive National Baptist Convention, this was the group that Dr. King and others, Gardner C. Taylor and others, formed when they left the National Baptist Convention USA because they felt they were not doing more when it comes to civil rights issues.
That's exactly right. There were a number of Baptist pastors who wanted to be supportive of Dr. King and his civil rights efforts, and so they formed the Progressive National Baptist Convention, and we wed social justice with spirituality. So our distinctive is that we do get involved and speak biblical points of justice.
I was speaking to Pastor Heber Brown from Baltimore this morning on the Thomas Reuter Morning Show, and of course last week, I think it was Tuesday, Pastor Jamal Bryan actually also was involved and led a march in Baltimore as well. And so how are you pushing and emphasizing for church leaders, local, state, and national, to be involved in this issue of getting answers and solving this criminal justice problem in America?
Well, we train our pastors to become involved at the local level because we believe that the leadership has to come locally. So in Ferguson, for example, we involved our pastors in meeting with the families as well as meeting with the local police department to try to help them to understand that the police are our servants, and they're there for us and not there just to be militaristic and to attack us. So we engage our pastors at the local level by providing training for them.
Well, question in a second. But what do you see in terms of, and how are you training them? But in terms of what, are you holding sessions? Are you holding regional, state trainings as well? And then what? How are you pulling the congregation in that? Because obviously the pastor as a leader is one thing, but at the end of the day, you have to have the people as well.
Well, we disseminate the information from the National Headquarters Office to our pastors, and they in turn disseminate it to members of their congregation and get their congregations involved.
When you met with the police, what was the general reaction, to what you had said to them and trying to appeal and say, of course, they're supposed to be servants for us. What did they say? What was their reaction?
Well, in Detroit, for example, we have a great police chief, mm-hmm. and they're very open to understanding what our concerns are. But at the same time, they want to make clear that they're there to protect us, not to attack us, and that we have a working relationship together.
Well, and I know very much you serve as a voice of the community in many ways. You have in your churches and the pews every day, every Sunday at least, and throughout the week as well, in many of the very active churches. Members of the community are also talking about what's going on. How are your preachers using that to actually communicate with police and, quite frankly, also with those lawmakers in Detroit and other places across the country?
Well, by becoming involved with the local police departments, then our pastors help our people to understand again that they're there to serve us. And there's no magic in it, but just to be able to communicate and develop a amicable relationship is what our goal is. But it's also in terms of trying to impact change in the culture of how police officers are trained. I mean, you reference, for example, a situation that we had in Detroit where a gentleman was arrested. They caught him on camera being beaten in the head. I think the police officer hit him about 16 times. He said, "I can't breathe." But they disregard that. We want them to understand, the police officers and the police department to understand, that these are humans that you're dealing with. We do understand that you have to do your job, but your job should not include killing a person if they are not armed and if they have in fact not posed a threat to you.
I know one of the things that was stated about the Ferguson protests is that we have a lack of leadership of new black leaders. And my question to you is, does your organization have a few of the leaders that are spreading the word, or are you just all very localized?
No, the Progressive Convention covers the nation. We have churches in 36 states out of the 50 states. And we work with Faith in Public Life, which is a clergy resource center here in Washington, D.C. And they provide training for our pastors on how to interact with local media, how to get their message out in the media, and how to interact with their congregations and disseminate information that we think is important for them to have.
And how are you?
And we provide that training in our national sessions, as well as in our regional meetings through our state convention.
Last question, go ahead.
How are you determining what your agenda should be?
Because we have an agenda, our goal and our responsibility is to monitor civil rights. For example, right now, the Voting Rights Act, Martin and I were in Selma just a few weeks ago to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the crossing of the Pettus Bridge. So Voting Rights Act is very important. We've had a number of 50-year anniversaries over the last couple of years. Megar Evers, for example, the 50th of his death, just trying to register people to vote. In 2013, of course, the Supreme Court gutted the Voting Rights Act. We see that as very important. It has high priority. So our focus is going to be on trying to get Voting Rights Act restored.
All right, Pastor Perkins, always good to see you. We certainly appreciate it. Thanks so much. And good luck with the Progressive National Baptist Convention.
Well, my pleasure to be here, and thank you for having me.
Folks, up next, looking to start your own business, how to make sure you are legally protected. We'll break it down for you in our legal segment, plus is Fit Live Win Monday, and how using a kettlebell workout to really get your workout going. It's 25 before top of the hour. News 1 Now on TV 1.
So you want the truth. Well, we got it.
That's how I talk. God knows it. I'm just straight.
It's News One Now with Roland Martin.
There are 1.9 million black-owned businesses in America. Black women own 1.1 million of those businesses. And there's somebody sitting out there right now. You're probably saying, I want to own my own business, which is great. That's wonderful. But the problem is you have to set it up right or you can get yourself screwed and screw your family as well. And so what is the right way to deal with launching your business? We'll chat with this with Monique Presley right now. Talking about this whole issue because it is a legal issue, folks, that's critically important, Monique. So let's talk about starting your business. And so there are some critical things. Obviously, folks have an idea, but an idea is great. Just getting a P.O. box is another thing, just getting you some business cards, but you got to go through a process.
Right, and none of those things that you just named should be first, but that is the way that we do it, Roland. We get an expensive website, we go out and get business cards, we pick a name, and we haven't done what I call the three I's, and that's to investigate, to incorporate, and to insure. So before you start your business, you may have this big idea for your business, but you haven't investigated the local laws for licenses and permits that are required for your area. You haven't investigated the different types of business structures so that you can figure out whether you want to be a sole proprietorship, which I strongly advise against, or whether you want to do some of the other business structures. And then you haven't taken the time to insure. So you've already said, the Lord gave me a business and I'm cooking cakes, and you're cooking cakes out of your garage with no permit, with no insurance, with no food handler's license, and all of those are no-nos. So that's why I say get your three I's in order and then move from there.
So let's talk about the different types of corporation. You mentioned sole proprietorship. Is that never a good idea? Because you can have, for instance, you can have a business, and when you can file separately when it comes to your taxes, which is basically additional income. But then you talk about do I do an INC? Do I do an LLC? And so how do I make the determination?
So when you're trying to start your business, you have to figure out, am I starting my business and I want it to be successful and that's my plan, or am I starting my business and it's just a mom or a mom and pop and that's the way that I want to finish? And then you decide whether you want a sole proprietorship or not. I know that's harsh for some, but you may be a freelance writer right now.
Right.
You may be doing something and you are already a sole proprietorship, even if you haven't taken any steps
right.
to do so.
That's my point. I mean, that kind of thing, that's what you are when you file taxes. There's another form that you have to actually file. But you can also make a transition. I mean, look, I initially had an LLC and we later changed to an INC for different reasons.
Right, and that's a great transition, and that's what I'm suggesting. I rarely, when I'm doing tips, stick a full opinion on it, but where an LLC is concerned, I suggest that for everyone, even if you're
so person
a
at home, what is the LLC?
It's a limited liability corporation, and that's a hybrid. That means you've got the benefits of corporation, and you've got the perks of partnership. So it's the best case scenario for you in terms of your taxes. It's the best case scenario in terms of the way that you operate your business, and it doesn't have all of the requirements that the full-blown corporation has. But if your business is growing and you're taking on people and you're thinking you want to add shareholders and you want to put some more meat on the bones, then you can move forward to the full-blown corporation. Or if you're starting out big and you've got 300 employees, then you may want to start there. But those are the options for you. And what I like is that at SBA.gov, you can go there and find out your structure and the information about that. You can review all of the choices. If you want to do a full-blown business plan, you can. All of that information is available.
So you got LLC, and so what's an INC?
An INC is an incorporation. It's just a corporation, a full-on corporate structure, and that's different in that you have a lot more particulars that you have to meet. You're going to have the regular corporate structure. You're going to have board members. You're going to have to do all of those things, but it differs from state to state. So that's why I say investigate before you incorporate.
Well, and that's why the other issue, because again, your state may be different, which is one of the reasons why a lot of people go to Delaware to incorporate, because it's so easy. And actually, Las Vegas, Nevada, all of a sudden is becoming up next as well. And when we say a partner, okay, so let's say you go into business with somebody, you also have to determine that structure, because let's say it goes sour.
And that's a part of your investigation, especially if you're thinking about doing something and you've got two people involved. And again, I don't really like partnerships in the full partnership structure as opposed to an LLC, because you could have, for example, Martin and Presley LLC, and it could have some partnership structure to it, but it still has the protections of the corporation. So if somebody comes after the Presley of Martin and Presley, then the Martin's home is not going to be up for grabs, and that's something that you're still in danger of under sole proprietorship and under partnership. So that's part of your investigation, as well as fees. We have to not be, in when we're starting businesses, be pound wise, penny foolish, or vice versa. When you're starting a business, figure out it takes $80 for me to go downtown and to register my business. Mm-hmm. I can call in and get an EIN, an employment identification number, for free, but then I've still got to go downtown or go online and figure out the rest of the information.
Well, so plus, it's another whole.
We really have to do our homework.
And it's another whole deal when you begin to talk about not just doing that, but then when you get into your whole tax issue in terms of how you file, it's all other kind of drama there. So,
taxes,
but that's for another
insurance.
Day.
Taxes and insurance.
Taxes and
insurance. Insure your business.
Well, that's for another day. Monique, I appreciate it. Thanks a bunch.
Okay, thank you.
Folks, Fit Live Win Monday. We're talking about a kettlebell workout. Yeah, really. I know. Trust me, it works. We're chatting with David Girton about that. Also, Essence Magazine stars 5 of the top powerful black women in Hollywood on their cover. We'll show you, plus some other covers as well. Hit me up with your thoughts on Twitter at News One or at Roland S. Martin, or go to our News One Facebook page. 14 before top of the hour, News One Now, TV One.
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News One Now with Roland Martin.
Birthday shout-out time. Yesterday, R&B singer Avant turned 37 years old. T-Boss, singer with TLC, she turned 45. Giancarlo Esposito turned 57. And today, New Jersey Senator Cory Booker turns 46. And Cuba Gooding Sr., lead singer of The Main Ingredient, he turns 71. All right, folks, it's Fit Live Win Monday. And, of course, we'll always focus on trying to get you healthy, trying to get you well. And one of the ways to do so is utilizing kettlebell and sandbell training. I know it sounds crazy, I know. But right now, joining us is the owner of Live Now?
Live Now Fitness.
Live Now Fitness, David Girton. David, how you doing?
I'm doing fantastic.
All
yourself?
Right. All good, all good. So we got kettlebell. Now, what's a sandbell? I mean, I've seen the kettlebell. What's a sandbell?
Sandbell's been around forever. Sandbags at Home Depot.
Sandbags.
Yeah,
gotcha.
Sandbags. They just put them in something that we can slam on the ground, throw around without them busting up and sand being all over the place.
Gotcha. All right, then. So what is it about the kettlebell that's just different from other sort of workout devices?
Well, first, it looks like a cannonball with a handle. Right? So the weight is distributed differently.
Okay.
So you're going to get a totally different workout than handling a dumbbell or a straight bar or sitting on a machine. You're talking flexibility, strength, and cardio all in one tool.
And in fact, we were shooting the video earlier, so this is you right here. So take us through that. You're just trying to ride around here.
So that's the kettlebell swing. So the last time I was on, I was doing kickboxing, and you said you're not a fighter, you're a lover. So
precisely.
Right? So this move right there, that first move, is all about the hips. Love
right,
is all
right.
in the hips, right?
right here,
it's the sandbell slam. Total body, we talking arms, legs, abs, cardio, the whole nine.
Okay. All right then. And what that's doing is, I got my calves, my thighs, I got everything involved.
Now we're talking about a little hand-eye coordination, right? The thighs are working again, cardio's working. You get everything with these tools. And then I'm going to go back to, you've seen that before, squat with an overhead raise, taking it straight above.
Now, what's the weight on this kettlebell?
This kettlebell is 10 pounds, but you can get them as heavy as 55, 95 pounds, whatever you can handle. But it doesn't take much.
And you like the 10-pound one because of versatility?
Well, no, because it was lighter for me to carry this morning.
I got you. All right. But a beginner, for a lot of people out there.
But beginners, yeah, you want to start with 10 pounds.
And the issue for a lot of folks is not necessarily the pounds, but also the number of reps.
Yeah, I mean, reps, it depends on the type of workout.
Right.
You know what I mean? But a beginner, I would start them right around 10 reps.
Okay.
So right there, that last exercise, I was working the back, which is back and arms, which is better than a bicep curl for most people. Right here, we working obliques, we working the legs again, cardio, arms are working. Like I said, you can get a little bit of everything with these tools.
All right, then.
And they're portable as well.
Well, and right, and that's the point there. And for folks who, again, who can't afford a gym or a membership, I mean, this really is helpful because you could do this, frankly, any place in your place.
Anywhere, right in the bedroom. You can take it out to the park. No problem. Easy to carry around. Do whatever you need to do with those two tools.
Now, it's interesting. I was talking to some folks, and they really swear by the kettlebell.
Yeah.
Because they say it just between versus the curls and versus, utilizing those weights, they can do different things with the kettlebell.
Absolutely. It's much more functional than doing bicep curls. Now, if you're a bodybuilder, you want to do the bicep curls.
Right.
But for most people sitting at home, they want to do something that's functional, that's going to help them in everyday life. And that's what you can do with these tools. You know, you're carrying groceries. You can emulate all of that stuff with these tools.
Okay. How can folks get more information?
Live Now Fitness, LIVENOW, fitness.com.
All right, then. Well, David, I appreciate it, folks. Again, go to his website, check it out, and try to get your workout on. That's it for Fit, Live, Win Monday. For more of our previous segments, go to news1.com and check it out. I'm Roland Martin. This is News One Now on TV One.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin.
Those game changers. That's what Essence Magazine is calling Shonda Rhimes, Demi Allen, Mara Brock Akil, Ava DuVernay, and Issa Rae. They all graced the cover of the magazine's May issue. Hip Hollywood reporter Jasmine Simpkins caught up with these bad sisters who have changed the face of Hollywood.
Essence Magazine's May issue is all about women who have changed the game in Hollywood, and who better to spotlight than Shonda Rhimes, Debbie Allen, Ava DuVernay, Mara Brock Akil, and Issa Rae. In the article Unscripted, these influential storytellers talk about how they navigated the waters and broke down barriers, and only we have exclusive clips from their sit-down.
Funny that Debbie Allen is here today, but she was everything. She was, I remember her on Fame, but I think when I found out she was behind the storytelling of Different World, I was like, I've got to get in that world. I think when I realized the world was something that I can infiltrate. And it's such an honor to be here with her today. Our journey has continued, but for us to be documented together in this way, I'm near tears, actually. I'm so excited.
But Brock Akil, who created series like Girlfriends and The Game, wasn't the only one. Ava DuVernay, whose film Selma was nominated for an Oscar, says she's been extremely influenced by Allen's work.
And the first time I ever heard about a Black woman director was Debbie Allen, and so that means a lot to me to share this cover with her.
The Black woman that has inspired me to be in art is really my mother. She's always been my greatest critic, my biggest fan. My mom.
Dressed in all white for the cover and red for the inside spread, the ladies also shared what it means to be featured in Essence, like Issa Rae, known for her web series, Awkward Black Girl.
These are women that I look up to, I aspire to, and Essence is just, it's beautiful.
Essence Magazine means to me the power of women. There's a sisterhood somehow associated with it for me. And that's probably because the first time I read it was I used to steal it from my older sisters and read all the articles probably when I was about 11 or 12. So it's always been a part of my life.
The May issue of Essence is on newsstands now. For HipHollywood.com and TV One, I'm Jasmine Simpson.
All right, Jasmine, I certainly appreciate it. Thank you so very much. Folks, tomorrow on News One Now, R&B singer CeCe Peniston will be in the house hanging out with us, having some good time as well. So we look forward to that. Don't forget today, in about an hour, Loretta Lynch is going to be sworn in as Attorney General of the United States. She'll be the first African-American woman to ever hold the position. You can go to doj.gov to actually watch that. You might be able to go to whitehouse.gov as well, and so I'm not sure if they will have that as well. Don't forget also, in an hour, the funeral of Freddie Gray taking place in Baltimore. That will be taking place. Earlier I talked with, actually this weekend, yesterday I talked to Mayor Stephanie Rawlins-Blake, and our goal is to have her back on the show this week to talk about this particular particular case to see what is up next. For continuous updates on what is going on, be sure to follow my Twitter feed at Roland S. Martin. You can also go to news1.com as well. You can also friend the show page for News One Now on Facebook, so go there as well. And so our goal is to keep you updated on what is going on. I got to get out of here, folks. Got to fly to Atlanta. Go interview Frankie Beverly for a music special that we are doing. So we look forward to that. So you have an absolute great day. I'll see you tomorrow right here on News One Now on TV One. Holla!
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News One Now with Roland Martin.